Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Now on ABC Radio National, it's time for Street Stories. There are many cities in Australia which might lay claim to being bicycle friendly, but sprawling, chaotic and often hilly Sydney isn't one of them. Tonight, why and how some cyclists take on the streets of Sydney. Producer is Nicole Steinke.
My name's Patrick and I started riding bikes at Leslie Del Paso's house when I was about four, and they had this all purple kid's bike made out of scraps, I guess, and we took turns having a go. And yeah, eventually I went for about 20 metres and crashed into a fence, and the next Christmas I got a bike. So then I was ready, I guess.
My new bicycle is race car blue, 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 blue. Used to belong to my big sister Sue, 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 Sue.
And was it love from then on, or...?
Oh, it was just practicality. You take it for granted. Every kid gets a bike, and if you want to go anywhere as a kid, the bike will take you there. Yeah, it was the way we got around. Went to picnics, went to swimming reservoirs. Oh, I just took it for granted.
I never believed I'd be going so fast, so fast.
So I'm just riding down Regent Street now. I'm passing a girl on a bike. She's riding down the footpath. And she's, I guess there's an argument for both. Do we go on the footpath? Do we go on the road? I'm a firm believer that bikes belong on the road. A lot of people, I understand, don't have the confidence. You know, I'm riding along now and I might only be a foot and a half away from that truck that just went past me. I'm constantly aware of what's behind me. I'm constantly aware of what's in the lane beside me, because I know that they tend to not see me, so they change lanes suddenly. I've got to get out of the way. This time of the morning, there's heaps of buses.
I came out for exercise, gentle exercise, and to notice the scenery and to botanize. And no sooner do I get on that accursed machine than off I go, hammer and tongs, scorching along the road and cursing aloud at myself for doing it. H.G. Wells, The Wheels of Chance.
Hi, I'm Fiona. We're in a house in Marrickville and we've got together for dinner tonight because we've got a visitor from New Zealand. Sally's here from Cycling Action Auckland. So we thought it'd be a good opportunity to get a few bike people together for dinner and share a few bike stories, which has been great. And then we've come here afterwards to watch a few bike videos. We're riding down the narrow street and the ute's behind us, and the ute's going vroom, vroom, vroom. And, you know, as soon as he gets out on the open road, he screams past, tyres spinning, smoke coming out the back, and he gets stuck behind a garbage truck. And we all have a great laugh. We see a lot of bicycle envy, basically, in drivers, and it must be really upsetting for them because they spend $20,000, $40,000 on their dream car. They've seen the ad on TV. There's no other traffic on the road. They just smoothly go wherever they want to go. Nothing's in their way. And here they are, stuck in a traffic jam, and the only people getting through are the people on bicycles who don't even have to fill up at the service station. It's really annoying for them, and I understand. And I feel sorry for them, and I think that, you know, all they need to do is come and ask, and I'll help them get a bike.
And lycra stretches, man. You can get a motorist into bike shorts.
No, none of us are wearing lycra tonight.
Oh, I'm sorry.
None of us are wearing lycra at all.
No, none of us. 'Twas Mulga Bill from Eagle Hawk that caught the cycling craze. He turned away the good old horse that served him many days. He dressed himself in cycling clothes, resplendent to be seen. He hurried off to town and bought a shining new machine.
I'm sort of interested in how people reach a stage where they think this is the way that the world should be, that the world should be on two wheels, and it shouldn't have an engine attached to those wheels.
I guess, yeah, as you become to understand it more, you love it more. I don't know. I moved to the Netherlands in 96, and my first experience with bikes there was stepping out at Central Station, because at the airport you go underground through space-age trains and high-tech public transport, then Central Station doors open up and it's like you're in the Addams Family set, except there's this pile of a million bicycles there, and then there's bicycle paths that go everywhere. And despite my background in planning and being told that I should be implementing bike paths in any plans that I make, I always thought bike paths are silly idea, because I can always get where I need to go faster by using the roads, and I'm entitled to use the roads. Bikes were around before cars. But then you move to the Netherlands, and I was trying to cut it up like a courier does in Sydney, you know, just go whichever way you like, and the bike paths were faster. Their infrastructure is very good, and the results for the rest of the city are enormous. On Friday afternoon, Friday evening, you can go and pick up a girl, sit her on your rack and go out, have coffee, go out to a disco. When I left the Netherlands, it was only then I really realised that I'd grown to love it.
I'm Eugene Schelter. I'm originally from Switzerland, since 20 years in Australia.
I'm standing in front of, well, a room full of all sorts of things, but there's a bicycle at the door, and I can see two wheels with no tires, and then a beautiful-looking racing bike. What's going on in this room?
The wheels that you saw, they stem from the same bicycle, but they are actually rotten, yeah, because I got knocked by a car some 8 weeks ago. They look new, but they are buckled, yeah. So I had to buy new wheels, yeah.
So for a racing bike, new wheels, how much?
That will cost you in the shop about $1,800.
$1,800.
Yeah, excellent, good wheels, yeah.
Is this the bike that you cycled around Australia in 56 days on?
Yes, I did, and it is as well the bicycle that made me do this, because I spent, this bicycle costs about $6,000, so I thought I better do something with it that is a bit spectacular.
He hurried off to town and bought a shining new machine. And as he wheeled it through the door with air of lordly pride, the grinning shop assistant said, "Excuse me, sir, can you ride?"
Moz once related this story to me, that he's actually moved house on a bicycle and has actually moved a queen-size bed mattress and ridden up, what was it, Enmore Road? Which is one of the busiest streets in Sydney, moving a mattress. And that, to me, is the pinnacle point of saying that you can almost do anything on a bicycle.
It wasn't just a mattress, though. It was mattresses and bookshelves and a whole lot of other stuff. And then the rest of us, which were carrying the rest of the gear in whatever trailers and other stuff we had. So it was a whole sort of procession of Moz's furniture heading up Enmore Road, up the hill in slow motion. But
holding up a lot of traffic, I would assume, with the bed.
Well, this is the thing, that normal Sydney traffic is impatient. You hold a motorist up for 30 seconds, that's just about a capital offence. And in some, well, actually at times it is a capital offence.
The other night a guy was shocked at that, yeah.
Okay, but anyway, motorists normally get quite annoyed if you hold them up at all. But experience nonetheless, suggests that if you're riding your push bike along with a double mattress on the trailer, motorists will just sit behind you going, "Oh my gosh, look at that." It's quite remarkable how polite they are.
She wears high heels, she rides a bicycle, not a tricycle, nor a sidecar. She goes, na, na, na,
na. Actually had to skip through a red light there, but stopped at the red light at Liberty Street. Pull into the classic courier move, the track stand. Most couriers are pretty proud of the track stand because we tend to do it better than most, because we tend to have a lot of practice at it. We're sitting at red lights, or not, as the case may be, and waiting. And it becomes a matter of pride not to put your feet down while you're standing still. You see guys get out there and they get pretty funky with it, pulling off no-handers, one-handers, one-footers. Some couriers are on what they call fixed bikes, where they have a fixed cog on the back. They're one-speed bikes, they don't have gears. One or two of the less sane elements of my community don't have brakes either, which is not an easy thing to do, particularly in this sort of weather where the roads are slippery.
When I see an adult on a bicycle, I do not despair for the future of the human race.
Well, Sydney's beautiful for a cyclist. Around the harbour, you know, all these spurs of land that the city's built up. You know, it's up and down, it's across town. So short, sharp hills.
What is the pleasure in being a courier? Because it seems to be something that for some people is a real passion.
Yeah, I think it's something akin to surfing. I find it beautiful, like the aesthetic in finding the holes and finding the flows and riding with the flows. I mean, I'm not into falling off. You know, I got sick and tired of it. I almost quit couriering in my first year because so much blood was coming out of me. Never broke anything. And never really was in danger of losing my life. But there's lots of, when you're learning, like chefs burn themselves all the time or cut themselves, and couriers lose a bit of skin. And I guess if you're a bit foolish, and young men are, yeah, it'll hurt more than if you're conservative and play it safe. But yeah, I find it really beautiful.
Taught me how to cycle just under 2 years ago. Yes. So yes, he's taught me how to ride, you know, two-wheeled bicycle without the use of training wheels. He taught me like how to cycle in the city.
Break.
And it's been a really steep learning curve.
Left.
I was going down, what's that suburb again was?
From King's Cross down to Woody the Wheels.
Yes, it's a pretty hilly area, and I was there on my first bicycle, and that was a small BMX, child's BMX really, because I wasn't confident enough to be on a bike where I couldn't sort of reach the ground on. So cruising down, and prior to sort of hopping on the bicycle, Moz had told me, oh, you know, you're learning how to ride your bike. You're either going to get hit by a car or you're going to either just fall off by yourself. Either way, just be prepared, you'll fall off your bike sometime in the future, anytime really. So we're cruising down, don't have much experience cycling, so going down pretty fast and sort of took a left turn and started trying to pedal. And didn't realise I was going too fast, and my foot slid off the pedal and into the front spokes of the wheel, and I went flying forwards. And I remember getting up and thinking, cool, I fell off my bike, it's my first fall, yes, I've got it over and done with. I had a couple of guys running up to me from the footpath saying, oh, are you all right, are you all right? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine, I just fell off my bike. Moz comes around, because he was cycling behind me, takes one look at me and says, oh, we've got to take you to a dentist. And I realised that I smashed the front few teeth, grazed the sort of front part of my face. It wasn't a painful experience. It was you know, educational. Dentistry. Yeah. Teeth are expensive.
Cycling around Australia, you need a bit of luggage with you. And to put a luggage carrier on a carbon fibre bicycle is... actually, it's not, in the first place, not possible. I started drawing up my own ideas, and a friend came along, helped me to build a luggage carrier that now fits this bicycle, and I can show you. It extends from the seat post forward, about 400 millimeters forward, and has a third point on the what we call the top tube of the bicycle. And on this flat piece, I can put then that box that you saw over there.
Just, are you talking about that little plastic container there?
Yeah, yeah.
Just that?
Yeah, that plastic container fits onto here and fits then nicely just behind the seat
That's only the size of a large lunchbox.
Yeah. There's not much more that I could put in. Just the basic clothes. Didn't even have a second pair of knicks. In the evening, just always wash it, and next morning use it again. So just really down to the basics. Yeah.
I think actually the bell's the most important tool, the most important tool on a bike. I never use it really to ask people to get out of the way. It's more a greeting. I know a lot of cyclists in Sydney, and if you ring, only the cyclists look. No one else knows. It's kind of the cyclist's form of communication. And I think that's the nicest sounding ring. You can get some ding ding, you know, some dingers, but this is a real ringer.
He's going to pop in front of this bus. There we go. Guy running into my lane without even looking. Slipped around him. I'm heading back again. Straight up George. Past the cinema complex.
Between Woolworths, main Woolworths on George Street, mate.
This is right there. Well, I've been a courier for... I'm getting on for 9 years now, on and off. They look after us pretty well now, so I've got myself into a cool position. I can't really afford to lose this job now, so here I am, working up and down the city all day, every day. But I don't mind. I get to ride a bike every day, so it's pretty hard to complain. It frees my weekends as well, so I can go and ride bikes.
You know, I go past this amazing coffee shop in the morning that is just pumping out the smell of coffee, you know, and there's pastries being delivered, and I notice the same woman every morning who's waiting out for her pastries, and you take the same cycle route every day, and you know people, like Fiona knows these train people. I took the bike bus with Fiona one day, and these people who work on the railways wave to the whole bike bus, hey Fiona, hey this, hey that, hey that, whoever it is. And she tells me that they exchange Christmas cards. And it's just that typical scenario that you're engaging in your environment. You're not stuck in your car and you're not unhappy on your bus. You're basically getting involved.
After your first day of cycling, one dream is inevitable. A memory of motion lingers in the muscles of your legs, and round they seem to go. You ride through dreamland on wonderful dream bicycles that change and grow. H.G. Wells.
You're listening to Street Stories on ABC Radio National and Bike Heaven.
So you come here for two purposes. You don't just come to the Addison Road markets to sell your North Indian food.
No, I tell my husband that I'm here to help him, but actually I've got a little mass bug stall off to the side where I'm giving out free maps and cycling information.
You both are right with yoga.
When did you first develop your passion for bicycles?
The passion for them comes from Fiona. But the amazing thing about her is, I mean, she's had to fill in the gaps and join up the dots for the bureaucrats who haven't actually ever bothered to sit down and work out how to provide for bicycles, because quite frankly, I think the agenda of the RTA has always been to suppress bicycles.
Because they're a nuisance to drivers.
Yes, they get in the way of cars, when in actual fact cars hold up traffic, not bicycles.
Well, cars are the traffic.
No, traffic is people passing and repassing on the common road. It's a right of way. It's an ancient right that's never, ever been legislated against. And I think if they'd thought about it, they probably would have done it, but it's too late.
I get the idea.
So there's my passion.
And you got on again.
Yes, definitely. Nothing's going to keep me off my bike. Yep, because I just love riding.
Welcome to Young and Stupid.
Oh, don't be stupid.
I've never fallen off my bike.
I've never fallen off my bike at all, and the most I've done was I injured my pinky when I was chatting to someone and went too close to a bollard and knocked it on the bollard and got a bruise on my pinky. But that's
have you ever been car doored?
I've been doored, and I've always miraculously ended up on the other side of the door, not knowing how I got from the door opening in front of me to the other side.
I think I've got to get Fiona teaching people to ride instead of me, because my whole attitude is like, you're going to fall off, you might as well get used to it. And I think maybe Fiona should teach people rather than me.
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's because, I mean, most people cycle when they're, like, kids, and so they generally fall off when they're kids. And so I just kind of, like, well, think, well, you know, I'm a latecomer. People fall off when they're kids. I'm going to fall off because I'm starting to cycle. Really, it doesn't really matter what age you are. Yeah, you're going to fall off if you're starting to learn something new. Yeah.
My mum's going to get a Pashley, which is a old British bike, and they're kind of beautiful, classic, kind of conservative, you know, green steel bike with sloping frames. But I've got a pink Surly, which is this beautiful steel framed bike, and it's a single speed, and even the grips where you put your hands are really comfortable. So it's the most leisurely bike I could ever get. But of course, as soon as I take it out, I assume everyone's going to want to steal it. So, you know, I have this rough bike, which my partner made me out of scrap, and it rides wonderfully, but no one would know. So I feel I can lock it, you know, outside Central Station overnight. No one's going to take it. I know how good it is, but relative to the Surly, it just doesn't, yeah, look the part.
And it took you 56 days to cycle all the way around Australia.
Yeah, 56 days was the goal. I came in a couple of hours before that, but it turned out really nicely. Yeah, it was the most exciting.
So how did each day begin?
Well, sometimes the day started before midnight, yeah, because in the north it's so hot. I sometimes started cycling in the evening at 8, cycle through the night and try to be there at the next place at 9 o'clock. Sometimes it didn't turn out, sometimes it took to 11 o'clock, but at 8 o'clock it is already so hot that you start to consuming too much fluid.
Yeah, morning. Morning. I'm just pulling up at the post office now. Got a bad ride in, it didn't start raining, so I'm happy. I tend to work on fairly simple principles. If it's not raining, it's a good day. And it's certainly not raining today, so it's a good day.
City Rail in Sydney, you're allowed to take your bike on the train, but you have to pay a concession fare if it's during peak hours. Now, one of the cool things is that most of the rail staff don't know when peak hour actually is. So buying a ticket for your bike can actually be quite fraught, because the staff will tell you you don't need it, and then the brown suits come round and tell you that actually it's $200 because you don't have it. But the other thing is that the bike needs a ticket even if it's in a box or a bag. You can take a large suitcase on the train free, but if that large suitcase contains a bicycle, the bicycle, the concealed bicycle, needs a ticket.
So theoretically, the station staff should be searching every suitcase to make sure there isn't a hidden bicycle that doesn't have a ticket.
And the rule isn't actually clear on whether the bicycle has to be rideable. Theoretically, those little brooches that look like bicycles may need a ticket.
Okay, get up. Come over here. Show me your bike.
It's got a horn, but... Sorry about that. I do have a bell as well, which is a bit more sociable. Well, actually, my mum on our last visit to Perth, like, Joe and I went over there with our bikes, and Mum's offering us the use of her car, and we're like, oh, no, we'll ride. And so she'd see us set off in the morning, and we'd go off riding, and we'd jump on the train with the bikes and go to the beach and ride around there and then ride home, or a few nice picnics. And every afternoon we'd ride home, and Mum would say, oh, what have you done? And I think she said, oh, wow. And since then, she's been riding the bike every day. But she's trying to get over the fear of riding, because she learned it when she was over 40. So it's a lot harder to relax into riding a bike. There's that sense of body movement through the air. And if you're not used to your body flowing around with a momentum all of its own, then, yeah, that makes it hard. And I think my mum, she's still gripping the bars really tight and getting white knuckles.
How did your body feel if you'd started out at 8 o'clock at night and it was a day where you didn't finish until 9, 10, 11 o'clock in the morning?
Well, the body, that's another thing. I started off the first day with a very hard ride, 400 kilometers up the coast, and then the next 2 days I took it very easy, just for my body, so that it can adapt to it. And that proved excellent, although I had to go to the doctor the second time because of a tendon. And then about the fifth or sixth day, because of saddle sores, I had to see the doctor, another doctor again. But what I found out and I learned on this, that one problem comes and it goes again, yeah?
How can your saddle sores go when you're still sitting on them?
Well, that's the trick, of course. First of all, you have to do something about it. That means keep it clean and put the artificial skin on top. That's what the doctor did. And then I rode kilometers and kilometers out of the saddle.
Did you actually enjoy the cycling?
I think so, yeah. I enjoyed most of it, yeah. Now it turned out very nice, yeah. And also not forget that this trip was my big holiday, yeah. So I was there to enjoy.
What's it been like growing up with bicycle fiends?
Well, when I was young, I used to sort of take it for granted. I sort of assumed that most parents were like this. Now that I know that a lot of people don't even own bikes, I suppose I'm a lot more grateful to the whole thing. It means that I don't have to go out of my way to keep fit, because just, you know, travelling somewhere is enough to keep me fit. So,
what do you mean? You didn't know that other people weren't like that as well?
Well, I sort of assumed that, you know, although they did have cars and I didn't, that was something that I knew was different. But I just assumed that, because that was all I'd been exposed to, really. So I was a bit surprised when I found out that, you know, my friend didn't own a bike. I'm just like, why not?
You know, there's a film, it's about the French resistance in the Second World War, I think by Jean-Luc Godard, and it opens with a man riding, because the French love cycling and they promote it, the Tour de France. And it's a man riding really fast down the hill, and Stefan Grappelli, that sort of jazz violinist, is playing in that really frenetic way, and he's just belting down the road with the wind in his hair. And that, to me, embodies cycling. It's just freedom. Right now my back is killing me, my feet are hurting, but if I get on a bicycle, it'll just carry me wherever I want to go. It's like a gift. That, to me, is the magic of cycling.
Cycle tracks abound in utopia. H.G. Wells.
You've been listening to Bicycle Heaven. It was produced by Nicole Steinke, and the sound engineer was Russell Stapleton. You'll find more information about cycling, including Fiona's bike bus, on the Street Stories website. And speaking of websites, next week here on Street Stories, we're launching a new project called My Street, where you can tell the story of your own street, road, court, or boulevard, in whatever form you like. video, audio, photos or text. How you can tell us about the story of your own street. Hear all about it next week on Street Stories. Coming up now, it's The Night Air.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.